teaching is not a profession in as much that you choose it. It's a vocation. You're called to it.
Hello, and welcome to the Arts of Language podcast with Andrew Poudois, founder of the Institute for Excellence in Writing, or as many like to say, IEW. My name is Julie Walker, and I'm honored to serve Andrew and IEW as the Chief Marketing Officer. Our goal is to equip teachers and teaching parents with methods and materials which will aid them in training their students to become confident and competent communicators and thinkers. So it has been decided by people that make these decisions that May is Teacher Appreciation Month.
Who makes such decisions?
I don't know, but I kind of like it.
I see.
It kind of it goes well with the idea of the school year's wrapping up. A lot of schools are done by the middle of May.
What does Mother's Day have to do with schools wrapping up? And isn't it possible that May is also International Nematode Appreciation Month? How do you know?
It could be, but you mentioned Mother's Day, which is also celebrated in May. So I think oftentimes they do go hand in glove because a lot of teachers are mothers. A lot of mothers are teachers. That's not always the case, but that's actually, we're going to combine both of those topics, specifically speaking to mothers who perhaps they have their children in school, some ideas that they could do to help show appreciation to their teachers, or perhaps to those students who are listening to our podcast, whose mothers are their teachers, and ways that they can express appreciation. I think the whole thing is appreciation, which is a big thing that we talk about a lot here at IEW.
This does remind me of a Mother's Day joke.
Okay, great. Let's hear it.
So there's two little kids, about, I don't know, probably 6 and 4. And they come into their mom's room on Mother's Day and say, "Mommy, Mommy, stay in bed. We'll be in the kitchen." Mm. So she thinks, oh, maybe they're going to try to make me some breakfast in bed. So she stays in bed. She hears noises in the kitchen. She stays in bed longer. A few more noises. No more noises. She's in bed. It's been a long time. Nothing. So she finally gets up and goes into the kitchen where she sees her two children with a huge mess all over the place, happily eating their scrambled eggs, toast, and cereal.
6 and 4 making scrambled eggs? That's impressive.
Well, it was a mess.
Yes, okay, got it.
And she said, "Oh, what are you guys doing?" And they said, "Well, it's Mother's Day, so we decided to make our own breakfast for you."
Oh. Save her the hassle of making them breakfast. And that was a real, that's funny.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So breakfast in bed. I'm trying to remember if through the years, because there have been many years I've been a mother, if I ever got breakfast in bed.
Have you ever wanted it? That's probably the bigger question.
Okay, well, here's
it's
truth.
It's the thought that counts.
Well, here's
the
truth.
Toast.
I typically don't eat breakfast. I usually try and wait until 10 or so, but I always do have a cup of coffee. So if we call that breakfast, then yes, my husband brings me breakfast in bed every day.
Oh, well, that's very romantic and sweet. My wife used to do that for me.
Aw.
I never did that for her.
No.
She's too picky about how her coffee is made.
Yes. So ways to show appreciation to teachers and mothers. You probably can't do breakfast in bed.
No,
for
but
teachers.
You could write an essay of gratitude.
Okay. Well, let's.
Well, why not?
That's a good idea.
Actually, it's one of the ancient rhetoric exercises. Part of the progymnasmata was an exercise called an encomium.
Oh, okay.
And that's where you find someone to praise, and then you write basically a speech in praise of that person.
There you go. I like it.
And so, you know, it used to be something that all children would practice doing at some mm-hmm. point in the process of their rhetoric training growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I think it's a handy thing to have.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And why not start with the most praiseworthy of all? moms and teachers.
Moms and teachers, indeed. And I know that that would be something that would be cherished.
Yes, but it also might need a little coaching. So for all the kids out there who want to write secretly an encomium praising their mother or teacher, what do you think would be some good topics to include?
Oh, that's good. Okay, let's come up with some possible topics. Let's see. Their patience.
Patience.
Okay. In the classroom or with them. Their perseverance in going through reviewing their homework. Their creativity in ways they present the materials. Their inquisitiveness. Because a good teacher will ask questions, not just give the answers to questions, right?
I hope everyone's writing these down. They might not remember them all.
I know. Well, I didn't write them down. But we
inquisitiveness or the ability to engage well with good questions.
Yes. A good teacher should have a repertoire of jokes.
Oh. Well, I think you can be a good teacher without jokes, but you can be a good teacher who's even better.
Yes.
If you do have some jokes.
Indeed. Indeed.
That may be probably, you know, the small things that aren't noticed, such as keeping a space organized. Right.
Does your teacher have a nice clean desk? That's something to praise.
Well, or just when you're in the room where you're learning, does that environment facilitate the attitude conducive to learning?
Does is it
tuning you in to good and true and beautiful things? Does it kind of cause to arise within you a desire for more wisdom and learning? I think, you know, an environment can do that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm thinking of my daughter-in-law who used to teach kindergarten, first grade, primary years, and she's also very creative, clever. She's a decorator, and her classrooms were always so beautiful. You would walk in and just go, ah. I don't have that skill, that ability to be able to see how to arrange things in a really pleasant way, but I love being in a space that has that.
But, you know, one of the things I talk about a lot is culture and how the purpose of culture is to grow stuff.
Right. I like that. Yep.
Because you
like
cultivate, like a petri dish. And so, you know, teachers, parents, anyone who's creating an environment should be asking the question, what are we trying to grow in this environment? And then, you know, a student can maybe semi-consciously say, oh, that's a very beautiful picture. And then subconsciously, they want more beauty in the picture.
Yeah, I like that.
Or they could hear an interesting or exciting story, and that engages their spirit. And then they semi-consciously want more of that engagement level.
Yeah, I like that. You and I are about the same age, and so this might be just as hard for you as it is for me. But think back over your childhood on into, you know, through high school. Can you think of some of your favorite teachers and what they did for you to help you?
That's a tough one. I've canceled out a great deal of my childhood memories pertaining to school. I do remember fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Berry. She was very short. Okay. I don't know how short, but this was fifth grade, and some of the kids were as tall as she was. She used to play dodgeball with us, and she would get out there and just hurl that dodgeball and try to whack us, and we would try to whack her.
Yeah.
And it didn't in any way undermine her authority. If any way, it just increased our respect.
Sure.
That she would, you know, get out there and give it all she got. Of course, you know, when you're 10, 11 years old, you look at any person who's your teacher and you think they must be old.
Right.
But I suspect she wasn't as old as I might have thought, given her vigor, you know, in the dodgeball circle.
Yes.
That's probably the single most powerful memory I have of a teacher in school, which I think is interesting because it really had nothing to do with the academic side. It wasn't like, oh, I remember her reading a good story to us or helping us write our reports or whatever. I mean, that's really fuzzy. But dodgeball, That's a crystal clear memory.
That's so, a good memory.
You know, it kind of proves that those things that maybe we might think are super important are going to fade away. And some of the little things that we do to engage with our students and our children may be the more significant. I think about my home. And, you know, we grew up in the days before screens, really. I mean, there was television, but it was very tightly controlled in our home.
Four channels.
And not a lot of options. And so there was just time to, like, be in the house. And you know how kids just kind of space out and stare at stuff when there's nothing else to keep them busy. And you can't say, I'm bored, or else then you get to do chores.
Right, exactly.
But there was a picture, a painting on our wall of a cypress, a Middle Eastern scene, I think. It was kind of a desert type of cypress tree. I cumulatively, over the years, I must have spent hours just staring at that picture and imagining all sorts of things, you know, in that picture. The other thing is there was a framed copy of the poem If by Rudyard Kipling, which I did not memorize, but I must have read many, many, many times, because when there's nothing to do and you're looking at the walls or you're standing around waiting for something or bored, you know, it's either that or find the Sears catalog and look at the toy section. But that's only, you know, in the weeks before Christmas.
Right, right.
So I do think that judiciously placed art and poetry and things on the wall, we weren't so inclined. My mother wasn't, but I've seen homes where there's like framed scripture verses that, you know, it's just in the environment and it can't hurt and it can very possibly do a tremendous amount of good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, teachers also in classrooms, you know, will often want to have a balance between things that are perhaps useful, like a multiplication times table chart or something, and also beautiful or engaging, like a, you know, the famous picture of Washington crossing the Delaware, you know, something that kids will just daydream about.
Yeah, because hopefully there's not too many screens for them to look at when they're in their school environment, right? Whether it's home or in a classroom.
Well, we hope.
I yes.
mean, we know the statistics. We know the truth on
it. It's true.
But
it's true. So I think of two of my teachers growing up. One is Mrs. Jensen, and she was actually my fifth and sixth grade teacher. And one of the things that I loved about her teaching, it reminds me of your nurturing, competent communicator talk, because we would come in from recess and we would put our heads down on our desk and she would read to us.
Yeah.
And she read Where the Red Fern Grows. That's the first time I heard that story.
Oh, my.
And that was, I lived in Minneapolis during that time and just loved her. She had a house on the lake, on Lake Harriet. And as an aside, my siblings and I would race sailboats on Lake Harriet. And so I knew that she would occasionally come out to see if she could spot our boat while we were rounding. Rose was the buoy that was by her house. But we would go over as a class. She would invite us over to her home, and we would have a little Christmas party there. So I loved Mrs. Jensen. She was just a delight to our, in fact, two of my friends, this is, I don't recommend this for teacher appreciation, parents or students, but two of my friends and I got together and we gave a gift to Mrs. Jensen, a puppy.
Oh, no.
I know, right?
You must have had inside info that she actually wanted
a
dog.
Did talk to her husband.
Because otherwise
first,
it would be a curse.
Yes, yes, yes. My other very memorable teacher was my 10th grade English teacher. And I think so much of what I am today in terms of loving writing and loving English and how the words come together is because of Mrs. Mark. And a lot of her isms, you know, her sayings kind of crept into my mothering and my teachering. Things like good enough isn't. I don't want excuses. I want production.
And hard work.
Yes,
is.
Hard work is immensely satisfying. Yes, so these are just some things that the teachers instilled in me. So not giving a puppy, possibly writing an encomium to your teacher. What other ways? I actually printed out some suggestions from the Parent Teacher Association of how we can show appreciation.
Well, I'm sure they had a great time brainstorming them their own encomium points.
Well, sure. But some of them are like public tributes. Let me just list a couple of these.
Go ahead.
So host a special breakfast or lunch for your teacher. Kind of like making your mom breakfast in bed, but just do a special lunch for them.
And fix the things you want to eat.
Well, right. Of course, a thank you card, you know, either individually from the students or collectively as a class.
You know, and thank you cards are interesting. I've gotten, of course, hundreds of them over the past decades. A lot more since we put the SSS stuff out.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I'll just get a little card from someone. You don't know how old, but by the writing, you figure 9, 10, 11,
right.
whatever. And it really does brighten your day
as
a teacher. Like, oh, this effort I put in, here's someone remote. In my case, I don't even know these people.
Yes.
And yet they are experiencing, you know, at least in part, my heart.
Yes.
And that's, I think, some of the great value of those thank you note cards. And it's unfortunately a tradition that's being lost.
Exactly, exactly. So highly recommend a thank you note. A gift, a certificate of appreciation. You know, you could just like design a little thing on your computer, print it out. Teacher of the year, you know, sign your class and, you know.
Okay.
That could be something like that. Planting a flower.
Sounds like a consolation gift for a teacher who didn't win the actual Teacher of the Year award.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Go ahead. What's next?
Planting a tree or something in their honor. Mm. You know, I actually like that idea. We did that for our grandchildren. We have two trees and now a third tree for our grandchildren. Each one of them have their own
trees. Where are
these trees? Well, the two are in Northern California, and then one is in our yard.
How are you ever going to find those two in Northern California?
Well, they're in their yard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was kind of a joke at the beginning, like, how big will this maple tree get? Because it's, you know, pretty small to start with. We planted on the day of Lucy's birth, and now the tree is massive, and she stands next to her tree every year at her birthday, and it's really a fun little memory. But, you know, planting a tree in your teacher's honor would be a great way to do that. Maybe find out what their favorite book is and get them a little gift of a book. Maybe put together a library for them. You know, like, here are the favorite books of the teachers in our school, you know, and then the students can check them out and know that this was Mrs. Jensen's favorite book growing up. I think that's a kind
of... I'm going to plug a little movie here.
Oh, great. Okay.
Called The Browning Version.
Oh.
I can't tell the whole thing, and it's actually kind of a depressing movie in the end.
Okay.
But it has a moral, it has a lesson, but the name of the movie comes from the gift that one of the students gave to a teacher that everyone disliked intensely, and it was a translation of a Greek classic by Browning.
Oh, okay.
Therefore, it was called The Browning Version.
Okay.
And the relationship between this boy who did see the heart of the teacher, even though it was severely crusted over and almost no one else could.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very interesting movie, but it is, you're going to cry. So
I like happy endings, so maybe I'll skip that one.
Yeah, I mean.
Does it have a happy ending? It's a redeeming moral value, though.
There's redemption. Mm-hmm. We'll put it that way.
Okay, great.
It's about as happy, maybe, as The Little Mermaid.
Oh, dear. The real story.
The real one.
Yeah. Right. Got it. Well, and I think, you know, just kind of along that line, think of all the teacher hero movies that we can see. And I know that you've got a list of them that you've recommended in the past, lessons learned from watching movies, and a lot of them are teacher hero movies. I think of... Finding Forrester.
Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my favorite is Stand By Me.
Mm.
That one, very powerful. The story, I don't remember the name of it, but it's about Jaime Escalante, who taught AP Calculus in inner city schools in Los Angeles.
Oh, my word.
And just raised these kids up from nothing.
Right.
And it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of them. And yeah, it's as good... A good teacher hero movie is as good as a good war movie, only a little less violent usually.
Yes. Usually. Well, and you know, I just think kind of going back to why, actually, I don't think we're going back to this at all, because we haven't really discussed why is it important to show gratitude to teachers. And I think of the saying that you often say that you sometimes get in trouble for, and that is teachers, essentially, they're just really sacrificing and they're giving so much of themselves. They're either...
You want me to say that teachers are either saints or idiots, because if they weren't saints, they're because they love children and are living a life of personal sacrifice. They would be idiots to stay in a school because there are easier ways to get money.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's also true that a lot of teachers, my daughter-in-law being one of them, you know, it did not work out
for her. No, it's a vocation.
Yes. You know,
yes. Teaching is not a profession in as much that you choose it.
Right.
It's a vocation. You're called to it. And, you know, people who stick in it long term clearly are called to it.
Yes.
I want to remind everyone that in our Teaching Writing Structure and Style Seminar Workbook Unit 5, there is one of the most magnificent story compositions written from Unit 5 by a student that I have ever read. It's the one on the Rockwell painting.
Yes.
And there's the teacher who's standing and it's, you know, happy birthday and there's an apple on the table. And there's only one picture. Mm-hmm. But the student who used this picture, of course, imagined a scene before and then a scene after and wrote a 3-paragraph event description of this picture. And I think that more than anything else really strikes this.
Yes.
And this was, of course, an old style because Norman Rockwell, so 100 years ago or more, of a teacher who really had given up a lot of the comforts of family or wealth or stability because she loved these children.
Yes.
And this expression of their love back to her was a real fulfillment. And it's a beautiful, beautiful composition. It's one of the best things I think we've ever seen a structure and style student write.
For a Unit 5, yeah.
Especially Unit 5.
Yeah. Yes, which is, of course, why it made it to the seminar workbook.
As a stellar example,
Yes, and we'll link to that actual page in our show notes so that our listeners can take a peek into what you're thinking in terms of what the possibility that a teacher can bring to students. Let me just read a couple more of these ideas. And this one is specific to students. What can students do? Students invite students to help decorate for Teacher Appreciation Week. You know, maybe decorate their desk or, you know, so when the teacher walks in, kind of like that Norman Rockwell idea, like before the teacher got there. I don't know if that's possible.
The surprise party kind of idea.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Have students interview their teachers and make that a part of their writing, like asking them questions about why they decided to become a teacher. And, you know, these would be then either recorded or given as a speech, you know, let me tell you about Mrs. Jensen. When she was 15 years old,
you hopefully don't have too many students doing that.
Yes,
or
exactly.
We get a little bit tedious after a while.
I love this one, and I don't even know how this would be possible, but invite alumni students and their parents to attend an open house at the school. And I remember, like, how could you find them? But I know that teachers love to see their former students, and Mrs. Mark was one of these. She had such an impact on her students that when they graduated from high school and went off to college or went off to have a family or whatever, they would just pop in and say hello to her.
Yeah,
and we would see that. So there I was in 10th grade English seeing, you know, Joe come in and saying hello to Mrs. Mark, and she would just beam. She was so excited. So, of course, when I went off to college, I did my best to pop in
come
every
back
now and then.
See your old teacher.
Yes, yes, and that was
good for you.
Both a joy to her and a joy to me too. So very inspiring.
I don't think that ever occurred to me ever.
Right.
Sadly.
Right. Well, you know, just to kind of wrap this up, I think our teachers deserve to be thanked. I think it's a lot of work. I think, in particular, teachers who happen to be homeschooling parents should not be neglected during this time. Just because they're your mom, you know, that whole idea of familiarity breeds contempt. And I know sometimes moms find every opportunity as a lesson in teaching. Like, well, we're going to the grocery store. Oh, we're going to go to a soccer game. Oh, we're going to Disneyland, you know, and suddenly it becomes an essay assignment later on. So just to appreciate moms for taking on that incredible responsibility for the future success of their children.
Well, happy Mother's Day.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or just visit us each week at iew.com/podcasts. Here you can also find show notes and relevant links from today's broadcast. One last thing, would you mind going to iTunes to rate and review our podcast? This really helps other smart, caring listeners like you find us. Thanks so much.